Hey everyone, and welcome back to The Advisor. I am Lisa Urbanski, co-host of the show, and today's guest is George Haymaker. So he is a former entrepreneur who faced some of life's darkest valleys, battling alcoholism, a pain pill addiction, having crippling anxiety, low self-esteem, and a mind that often felt like his worst enemy. But he didn't just get sober, he transformed. Through deep inner work, neuro rewiring, and a relentless commitment to healing, he not only broke free from substance dependency, but he also dismantled those mental patterns that we get into and dismantled the emotional pain that led him there in the first place. So he is like living proof that recovery isn't just about quitting. It's about becoming something new. And I'm so excited to talk to him today because he's going to talk to us about the science of feeling stuck, the brain science behind feeling stuck. Before we get started, I just want to thank our sponsors, Spreaker and iHeartRadio. Without you guys, this conversation would not be possible. To our audience, please like, please subscribe, because without you guys, this also would not be possible. How's it going, George? Thanks for coming.
Hey Lisa, great to be here. Thanks so much for the nice introduction. I was beginning to wonder if I had anything going for me there for a minute.
Yeah, well, I feel like you have a lot going for you there. I mean, turning around an addiction, not a lot of people fight through that and you know come out on the other side of that. And I think that's such a important point to make. It is really, really hard to conquer that. So I mean, I applaud you. I'm literally applauding you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Addiction is difficult and it's progressive and it can take you to a really bad place if it's not intervened with early enough. And in my situation, it got the better of me and completely hijacked my brain. And it took a lot to reach deep and summon the wherewithal to try again, but thankfully I did. And what I was able to learn early on is that the brain is forgiving. So all of this addiction, it happened in my brain, but fortunately the brain is forgiving and it develops these patterns, addiction or otherwise. And these patterns are no more than just repetitions of experiences over and over again. And the more that we do these repetitions of certain experiences, the stronger that they get. But they can be reversed, and we can create new patterns, new experiences, just as easily as we've created the ones that aren't helpful.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I'm a little bit curious, and I know the audience is too. So, do you know what led to the dependency? Was it a certain emotion? Was it a certain point in your life? Would you mind sharing a little bit about that?
My apologies. My speaker just cut out for just a second. Would you just repeat that question?
Absolutely, I will. So I just want to know, and I know the audience would be curious, you know, what was your experience like? What led to the substance use abuse? And then what led to the transformation? I know those are three very separate things, but let's start with like what led to it.
Well, the patterns basically. So my pattern started in childhood, as many people's do. And I grew up in a privileged upbringing financially, but there were elements of it that were discomforting. I was punished a lot physically. I moved around a lot. My dad was a corporate climber, so we moved every 12 to 18 months. So I was constantly moving in schools, out of school, saying goodbye to friends, having to meet new friends, always being the new kid. I also experienced some sexual abuse from some older boys early in childhood. And my parents moved overseas, and I went away to boarding school here in the US in the ninth grade. And so I was kind of fending for myself from that point on, seeing my family once a year. So the combination of all those things kind of really activated my nervous system. I was always feeling under threat. misinterpreting situations that weren't threatening for threatening, easy to anger, easy to feeling self-conscious, feeling self-doubt, lots of anxiety. And so I kind of grew up with these patterns. And the more times that you repeat them, the stronger that they get. They're like roots of a tree. And so whether the patterns are positive or negative, it doesn't matter. They create in the same way, just through repetition. And the more emotionally charged they are, the stronger they get. So when you start to, patterns are typically combinations of emotions and thoughts and actions, and they're all woven together. Because if you think about it, if we act out in anger, it's the action of anger, and then it's also the emotion of anger and the negative thoughts that are happening while we're angry. So they're all kind of blended up together into this pattern. And these patterns are actually neural pathways in our brain. They're actually strings of neurons that all kind of group together to make up this pattern. And every time we repeat it, these patterns, which are like roots in the ground, get stronger and stronger. And so, I got to college and I had never really experimented with drugs and alcohol. And I found drugs and alcohol in college, as a lot of most of us do. And I found that all of my mental discomfort went away. It all got better. And so that's how I chose to cope with my patterns for the next 30 years. I carried these patterns with me into adulthood. And these patterns persist and will stay with you until you recognize what they are and do something to change them. And so that's why a lot of adults, experience ongoing patterns is because they formed early in childhood when they were necessary to survive. But then they've carried them with them because they keep reenacting them to different situations and scenarios, and they just keep getting stronger and stronger. So in my case, I didn't like how I was feeling about all those patterns, and chose to medicate. And I have a lot of addiction in my family, which is a whole nother pattern. And that just made me more susceptible, the combination of addiction in the genes and also these mental patterns that made me feel uncomfortable. I could even describe them as traumatic. The combination of those things just makes someone a lot more likely to become addicted later on in life. And so that's what happened until the addiction got out of control. And at the end, I was taking a lot of pain pills and drinking a lot just to feel normal, just to get by, just to keep myself from going into withdrawal. And yeah, there I was at 52 years of age, sitting in rehab, wondering how the heck I had gotten there and was it worth trying again? And what was change even going to look like? Because I had lived 52 years in the same patterns. I didn't even know another way. I didn't even know the brain could change. I didn't know anything. I just knew that somehow I'd gotten to that place and I was unhappy and desperate. And so at that moment, I reached deep and thought I'd give it another try. And that 12 years later, I've been down the path. As you said earlier, there's sobriety where you stop using and drinking, but there's also recovery, which is really different than sobriety. Recovery is all about becoming a different and better version of yourself. And that's what helps keep you sober, is this pursuit of a being in a process of being on a path of being better. And that's really what I try to help people with, is reinventing themselves, rewiring their brains, because that's really what's involved. The brain has to be rewired in a new and different version of yourself, in order for a re true recovery and transformation to take place.
Yeah, there's something that you said that, took me back, and I think the audience can relate. When you said in college, when you used the alcohol and drugs, it took all of those negative feelings away. Now, how powerful is that, right? And how easy would it be for someone to start depending on something when they feel better? And it took It's an instantaneous, it's that dopamine hit that everyone wants, that everyone craves, right? It's that instant, immediate safety feeling. That must have been such a powerful moment for you. Now, Can I ask you, what do you remember the moment when you decided to take it, like start changing or wanting to change? Or was it just a desire to want more for yourself? Was it a situation? What kind of was a catalyst for that?
So I liken it to a mouse in a maze, and the mouse has tried to turn left and turn right, and this is the addiction maze. And he's tried to figure out every which way he can to continue to run his life while still using drugs and alcohol. And so a lot of addicts and alcoholics will try to not drink during the week, only on the weekends. They try to only drink certain types of booze, not others. You name it, we've all tried it. And so that's the trying to turn left and right, trying to figure out a way to keep your life going and still use the substances. And in my case, we all have the choice because we can see what we can honestly see what's happening and feel what's happening to us. We know that things are slipping. But I stayed in the maze all the way until the very end, when I ended up in the room at the end of the maze where there's no more turning left or right, and all that was left in the room was a mirror on the wall, and I had to take a hard look in it. I mean, at the end, I was doing 50 pain pills a day and drinking 2 bottles of vodka every day. I could not go more than 10 or 15 minutes without using in order to just calm my system down and stop the withdrawing. So for me, I was at the end of the road, and I physically could not keep going. I was going to die. And so the choice was somewhat easy for me because it was one of those two. There weren't a lot of other options. For other people, they're maybe not as far along down that path, and maybe they can get off sooner. But yeah, addiction was, my entire mom's side of my family is stricken with addiction, or has been. My brother died from it, my mom, my aunt, my cousin, and so what happens in those cases where we're predisposed genetically is if that addiction gets triggered, if the genes get expressed, a lot of the people that have the genetic predisposition, their reward systems don't function correctly. In other words, they don't get reward off normal things. And so when they find drugs and alcohol, it's like their first true exposure to things that are truly rewarding. And they're like blown away, like, wow, this is just amazing. And the other part of the insidious part of addiction is that the amount of dopamine you get from these substances is 3 to 10 times higher than you get from any other life experience. Your best orgasm, your best meal, your best falling in love, like, the meth gives you a dopamine spike 10 times any of those natural life pleasures. And so, the brain gets, which loves reward and loves these feel-good chemicals like dopamine. And if you already have a deficit, like your brain's not able to experience reward in normal ways, and it really hasn't growing up, and you get a hold of these substances, your brain just falls in love with them and nothing else compares. And so it just wants to stay there in order to keep reaping these rewards. And the problem is there's so much dopamine flooding the brain that the actual infrastructure of the brain, the neurons, the feel-good chemicals themselves begin to malfunction. And the amount of dopamine stops registering because it's like trying to it's trying to flow like 500 gallons of water through a garden hose. The brain's not made for this much dopamine. And so the receptors start to fail, the neurons start to break down. And in order to keep getting that same feeling, we have to keep doing more and more of it in order to try to get the same feeling. And that's why people talk about trying to chase that first buzz, is because the brain starts to malfunction and degrade through all of this dopamine surging that it's not meant to have. And so you have to keep doing more. That's called tolerance. That's why people build up tolerance. They have to keep doing more and more because the dopamine's not getting through the brain infrastructure. And so, over time, As we stop doing the substances, even for a moment, the brain starts to withdraw. It needs more, and that's why we get caught in these vicious cycles, because we're at these elevated dopamine levels, and then it begins to drop, and that drop feels like withdrawal, and then we get cravings, and then we have to do more to get back to feel normal, and the tolerance is building up, so we have to keep doing more and more, and that's the vicious cycle of addiction neurologically, and why we get trapped in it.
So I love what you said about the whole cycle because that's so real and I could actually picture it as you were saying it. But one thing I wanted to go back to is when you said like your whole family history has this history of addiction. But the beautiful thing is it stopped with you. And that's a powerful, powerful thing. Like to be able to break that cycle, turn it around, and then use it to inspire and help other people is absolutely amazing. So thank you so much for sharing that with us. Can we talk a little bit about, the science behind feeling stuck? So can we talk about that and then talk a little bit about how we can start changing that?
Sure. So the brain, it helps to first understand a little bit about the brain, what it is, and what it's wired to do. So the brain weighs 3 pounds and it's mostly water, 75%. But it really is the engine that runs everything in us, right? Nothing happens without the brain. Its primary role is to be able to predict what's going on around us and anticipate any types of threats so that it can keep us safe, help us survive, so that we can have babies and procreate the species. Okay, that's really the brain's number one job. It's not to, help us buy nicer cars and buy bigger houses. It's really, if you think about, how long humans have been alive and, where we started millions of years ago, however long ago it was, there weren't all the niceties around back then. So it's really just to, procreate and continue with the species. And so the brain is has a certain amount of resources that it's working with. And so it wants to conserve resources and keep all of our systems running in the interest of keeping us safe and survive. And so the brain operates off prediction. So what happens is that when we let's say that we take my example as a younger person, and I grew up in a, let's call it, threatening environment where I was always anticipating threats and actually feeling threatened, like my safety was threatened. And so I started to develop some patterns in order to survive those circumstances. Okay. And so what my brain did is it started to register those patterns and reinforce them and stick with them because it deemed that that was the best way to help keep me safe and survive. Okay. And so those patterns continued on and kept get reinforced and reinforced. And I carried those with me into adulthood. And so the brain and those will just continue and keep getting stronger unless I become aware of them and do something to intervene and change them. But if I don't, they will just continue to operate and continue to build strength. And so what happened to me as I went into adulthood, I was interpreting all types of situations as threatening. My brain was, just because those are the patterns that I had developed. And so I was getting angry as a child. I was getting angry as an adult. I was ultra defensive as a child. I was ultra defensive as an adult. And the situations might have been, different. In as a kid, I might have been getting spanked, or, might have been getting bullied in a schoolyard. But as an adult, the situations might have been different. It might have been a business situation, or somebody was arguing with me, and I instantly felt under threat, and I would still act out the same way and feel the same negative thoughts, or and feel the same negative emotions, all because these patterns repeated themselves, because the brain wants to is built on prediction. So it takes all of your past experiences and pulls them forward to say, what are you experiencing now? What have you experienced in the past that's most like it? And I'm just going to keep predicting the same thoughts, feelings, and behaviors over and over again, because I know that, this is what you've done in the past, and I know that you've stayed safe by staying in these patterns. And so that's really what the brain is doing, is it your brain doesn't think for you. You have to intervene in the brain if you want something to be different. So the brain is just really running these prediction models all the time, trying to conserve resources so that it's just trying to get you through life to help keep you somewhat safe and survive, even if you're uncomfortable, even if these patterns are not working anymore and they're really unhelpful and they're affecting your life. Your brain still thinks that you're surviving and you're safe in terms of survival. And so it's not really worried about whether you're uncomfortable or not. It's just worried about trying to keep you in survival.
So how do we start breaking that cycle?
So what we need to do then is take that pattern and become aware of it, because otherwise it'll just repeat on its own. The brain will just keep regurgitating it. So we have to stop and say, okay, this pattern is not really me. It's a function of my brain's predictive mechanisms. Okay. So it's not me. I know a lot of us feel like these thoughts and feelings and actions that are all tied up together, they're just overwhelming. We feel like it's us now, but it's really not. It's just the brain predicting that this is how we should be because it's seen us be this way in the past. Okay. So we have to then say, let's take a moment, analyze it. We don't like this pattern. We now know, based on what George said, that we can reconstruct a different pattern that's different than this one if we so choose. But it really helps to loosen the grip of this particular pattern. Like, we have to loosen our hold on it because we're holding on to it so tightly now. We've repeated it so many times with such energy and emotion that it's stuck. It's like that jar of applesauce that you pull out of your pantry and you can't get that lid off, So you have to unstick it. You have to like bang it on the counter a few times to get
Take a
it to
knife,
unstick.
take a knife.
Yeah. And then it releases. And so what we do is we go back to the origins of that pattern and say, where do we think that this pattern first started? And a lot of times it's back in childhood. And the enlightenment and the epiphany and the insights that people get around this type of discovery, saying, wow, this is why I'm acting and feeling and thinking this way today, is because it started way back then. Now it makes sense. And I've carried it with me because my brain just kept predicting it because it kept coming up on situations that to it seemed like I should keep acting and feeling and thinking this way. And so, but it no longer makes sense today. These situations that I'm encountering today aren't like they were when I was a child. And these things aren't serving me well anymore. It's causing me problems. And so just that awareness begins to loosen the grip. And that's what we call it, loosening the grip of the pattern. Because if we could begin to consider options, that there are other ways to think, feel, and behave today other than this, then we begin to shed the grip and the tightness that this thing has over us. And we're now, our mind is now beginning to open up to other possibilities. And so we look for contrary evidence. Let's say we have self-confidence issues, that stem from childhood. So we start to look for other areas in our lives where we are confident. And we say, well, we're not confident here, and it's causing us problems. Like, let's say social engagements. Okay, we're really uncomfortable into groups of people, but we're confident in other areas of our life. So we begin to say, well, we can be confident. It just this one area is affected. Or we can say, well, what is the cost of being having a lack of confidence? What is this costing us? Well, we're not able to meet new friends. We feel really anxious when we're around people, and we're just tired of it. It's costing us a great deal. And so, we go through these different tool sets and really try to loosen the grip of this. And once the grip is loosened and we don't feel, all of a sudden we just feel less stuck, less attached to the pattern, okay? And then we begin to consider new possibilities, how to reconstruct how we want to be as opposed to how we've been. And then we have to just diagram, visualize, reconstruct a new set of thought, feeling, and behavior together that represent how we would really like to be. And a lot of times it's a matter of diving into our values, our strengths, our psychological needs, and building a new identity that represents how we would really like to be going forward. And that's what I had to do, coming out of addiction, is I had to say, well, I sure as hell don't want to be like who I was. This is who I want to be. I want to have these values. I have these types of psychological needs. Here are my strengths. And I actually diagrammed and drew a picture of this new person that I wanted to be. Okay. And then we say, well, this is how that new person wants to experience this new situation. He doesn't want to have a lack of confidence. He doesn't want to be angry and detect threats, everywhere he looks. Okay. And so you begin to then envision that person and these new patterns. Okay. And then they're just visions for you. Okay. But in order for them to become real, well, they have to be practiced. The same way that we develop the old patterns through practice, we have to practice the new patterns. And we have to find reward that we can attach to the new patterns in order for the brain to want to go there. Remember, the brain likes reward. That's why it loves the dopamine from substances. If we can find reward in being this new way, then the brain is going to want to go there. Initially, change feels hard because the brain doesn't want to go to a place that it doesn't understand. Remember, the brain wants to protect you, keep you safe. It doesn't want to, it's not willingly going to go to this change place because it doesn't know if you're going to be safe there. But we have to give it reward by envisioning how great this new life is going to be. And then we start to close our eyes and envision what it's going to be like to not get angry, envision what it's going to like to be confident. And then we start to the feel-good chemicals, the dopamine, the serotonin, how good it's going to feel to have new friends, the oxytocin starts to, and we start to let these things wash over us. At the beginning, they're only an illusion. But little by little, if we start to practice these new patterns and put ourselves in these places, and practice, we start to experience itty bitty little amounts of this reward. And the brain starts to say, okay, it's like training a dog. The dog begins to respond because you're rewarding it. And so that's how these new patterns get developed over time. And if you stay fastidious to processes like this, you can become a different version of yourself in 90 days. If you are fastidious about following these processes.
Wow, I love that. Picturing the person that you want to become and then just not letting anything stop you to get there. And that is so difficult when you're in that really negative pattern, when you're used to grabbing something to fix it immediately, the instant gratification, right? So how powerful and amazing, like, well done, like, that's incredible. And what would you say to the person who's listening right now and they don't know where to turn, how to start? Like, what would you say to them?
Well, for me, I needed help. There's no way I could figure this stuff out on my own. There's no way that I could navigate what was necessary because I just had no idea. And that's really the biggest impediment is that we just don't understand. I had zero idea that all this stuff had happened in my brain and that it was possible for the brain to change. So without that knowledge, you don't know where to turn. And so, whether it's I think the biggest thing is to get help, whether it's doing the research on your own, or if you're in addiction, there's plenty of Groups out there that can help, 12-step groups and otherwise. There's coaching. That's part of what I do is I help people through these transformational processes. Generally, they're 90 days long where we take these patterns. We become aware of them. We break them down. We understand what makes them up. We find the origins of them. We loosen the grip. We redesign whole new identities for the person. And then we start to lay out new lifestyles that represent how this person wants to live. And then we just get on the path, design their days one after the next. And that, when I say designing the days, I'm talking about from the minute you wake up to the minute you go to bed, and even while you're asleep, we choreograph how your sleep's going to go. Because every minute of every 24-hour period is critical to redesigning your brain. Your brain is made up of 85 billion neurons, and they get put into these patterns based on how you've acted, thought, and felt through your entire life. But that mapping is unique to you, and it looks like a map of the US with all the roads and rivers and bridges and tributaries and everything else. Everybody's looks different, but it can easily shift and become a new map. But it starts with the map won't happen until you start to change how you think, feel, and behave. And then the map follows. Your neurons actually physically move to represent your new way of being. But your brain won't map until you start to change what you do. Okay. And it just really helps to, I think, have the knowledge about, all that possibility and then how you get from point A to point B, right? I mean, there's, we talk about what to do when you first wake up. We talk about, your mental resources, how to maximize them by your lifestyle, how to expand the tank of resources over time, how to spend them during the day. There's certain things we do during the day, like stress consumes mental resources 2 to 3 times faster than when you're not stressed. And so if you think about stress that way, and stress, by the way, is not even a bad thing. It's just your brain telling you that it needs more resources to do something. We always interpret stress as bad because we have negative thoughts and emotions that go along with it. But it's really not. So if we understand our brain at an intimate level and understand everything it's trying to tell us, like when it triggers stress, it doesn't have to be negative. And if we took that communication and said, this doesn't have to be negative, it's really just my body and brain asking for more resources. So I'm not going to think negatively and I'm not going to feel negatively. I'm going to reconstruct my entire relationship with stress and look at it differently now. And so we just completely, we I educate people on how the brain works, how it functions, how to develop a relationship with it, how to create a life around, giving the brain what it needs so it can give us what we need. I think a lot of us just don't even care for the brain. Like we just don't even know what it needs. We don't think about, well, how can I take care of you so you can take care of me, right? We understand we have to take care of our bodies that way, I think, to some degree, but we don't even spend the time to think, well, the brain needs care also. So that's what, I think that's what it requires is an in-depth knowledge of what it is we're trying to accomplish here and how to get there.
Yes. I love that you do that. So if someone was looking to hire you, where would they find you?
On my website, georgehaymaker.com, there's a discovery link where you can set up a time for us to talk. It's a free call for 30 minutes, and we can just talk about what's going on in your world and see if we're a fit to work together. And there's no pressure, no pitching. Just, I'm here to kind of consult and just, maybe, talk about what's possible for you.
Amazing, amazing. What a service to provide. And what a story you have. Thank you so much for being here today and for sharing that with everybody and for giving us hope, that there is the ability. You're a living example of a transformation, right? And that's incredible. So thank you so much for being here. It was such an honor.
My pleasure, Lisa. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yes. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to The Advisor. If you have not yet liked and subscribed, you need to do that before we leave today. Please, we need you so we can hear more stories like this. Mr. Haymaker just transforming his life around. What a story. Thanks again, George. And to our audience, until next time.